Welcome to the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast. Thank you very much for being with us once more. Thank you to Sam Lana for being alongside me. And a big thank you to our guest for joining us. How do I go about introducing this guy, Sam Lana? A name synonymous with world-class rugby football. A name that anyone who has watched rugby this last 20 years will know. To play once for the mighty All Blacks at wing three quarter, you have to be so good. So imagine how good this guy was. New Zealand and Hawke's Bay's finest. Please welcome to the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast, Mr. Israel Dagg. Yeah.
What an intro. Sam Squared. Absolutely love it. What an opportunity. Hey, I appreciate that. I thought you were going to go down Israel Dagg, the villain, as he's known up there in the north. But I'm glad you stayed away from that.
We might get to that. We might not, because there is so much to get through, Izzy. So much to do. We've kind of limited ourselves because we know that A, you've got a lot on, and B, if we do it well, there's a chance that some point in the future you might come back on. So anyway, look.
I'm saying come back for you, Sammy. You come on my thing, and it's only right that I pay back what you've been able to
do. You're a good man. You're a good man. So much to talk about. I'm gonna leap in with one more, and it's a massive question, and I'm fascinated. We on the Sam and I on the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast, we're always looking for people who know the answer, and I'm not sure whether you know the answer to this question, but I'm thinking that you're as good a person as we could possibly get on to answer this question, and it's all to do with how rugby does what it does in New Zealand. What is it, Israel Dagg, about rugby that connects with the New Zealand people? Have you worked this out? I mean, there are loads of sports. You could have picked any of them. Why rugby?
It's a great question. I think rugby in this country is a sport for everyone. And when I say that, a lot of the sports that are played, you know, they require a lot of resources and a lot of investment for young kids. You know, golf, you've got to go get golf clubs. You've got to go out and get golf memberships. Basketball, you've got to get golf shoes. Basketball hoops, etc. So I think it's more the accessibility for an everyday kid for New Zealanders. You know, all you need is an imagination. You know, for me growing up, my imagination, stretched far and wide. I didn't have use to rugby boots or rugby balls or any sort of goalposts, but you could use your imagination. So I used to use my sister's slippers, for an example, as a rugby ball, and using that and making use of what you had. So for me, I think it's a connection to everyone. And you've seen that not only with rugby, you've seen that with rugby league. Anything that involves an oval ball, young kids just want to be a part of it. You can play rugby anywhere. You do not need big facilities and big basketball tennis courts. You can go out on your backyard, which I did as a young kid. So I think it's that connection to what is truly unique about New Zealand. You know, we are rural, we are isolated country down here, and there's a lot of land and there's a lot of places to run around. So if I had one common answer for it, I think it would be solely that it's more accessible for younger kids. And you know, we've got some fantastic regions and communities around the country that are in the middle of nowhere. So their access to certain things aren't quite the same as the big cities, and they produce some fantastic rugby players. So if I had one answer, it would probably be that. It's more, you know, available for anyone around the country.
Yeah, both Sam and I have Welsh leaning in terms of, you know, when internationals come on, which jersey we would probably want to pull on if we ever could. And I've always thought that those two teams, Wales and New Zealand, have some sort of commonality there that just links them. And maybe it's kind of what you're talking about in terms of, you know, big open places where there wasn't potentially a huge amount other to do. The imagination came in, and rugby in Wales is probably similar. It's probably one of the only countries that you would put on a par with New Zealand. Did you, Izzy, feel like that when you came up against the Welsh? Did you ever feel, oh, these guys get it? These guys understand it?
Yeah, for sure. I had many battles with the Welsh. Absolutely love my time, and you know, it's a special place. Travelled to Cardiff many a times, played Celtic Manor golf course, and it's a beautiful, you know, part of the world. So when you go to Wales, and you're coming from New Zealand, it's very much similar. You know, we have a similar mindset, we have a similar way of life, and yeah, I guess that probably plays a big part and a huge reason why these sports are probably considered a major sport in these regions. And there's no better stadium. People ask me the question of what is the greatest stadium to play at Atlanta. It's Millennium Stadium. You know, there is no better build up to a game than leaving the Hilton Hotel, getting in your bus, and there are, you know, a couple of horses leading you down to the stadium. And then you're just going into this arena and you look up and it's monstrous, the stadium. And there's just fans. There's the, you know, there's something about the Welsh fans. They are so patriotic. They are loud. They are, you know, they are reliable. They love their team through and through. And it was the one place I actually got to meet Prince William. So there you go. The English, the Welsh team actually got to meet Kate Middleton. Probably met her, but no, got to meet Prince William. That was a pretty unique place. So yeah, I think we have strong roots. We have a history that goes back a long time. That time when the All Blacks weren't able to perform the haka, they had to do it in the stadium. We'll never forget that moment. And still, we got that donut hanging over the Welsh at the moment, which we'll hang on to for a very long time, because we don't want you guys to get like the Irish, eh? And you know what they're doing.
that started off very positive towards the Welsh, Izzy, and then yeah, halfway through it changed.
It turned at the end, didn't it? Oh no, carry on. We'll pretend we still like him. Carry on.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
I do love the Welsh, and I'm just forget Jonathan. Jonathan, he just retired.
Oh, Jonathan Davis.
Jonathan, Johnny Davies, mate, Davis. Oh, what a player! Absolute class player. I just saw that on socials yesterday. He's just retired. So, mate, Lee Williams, Lee Halfpenny, you know, Hook in the 10 position. You've just had some phenomenal players over the past, and some battles that I'll cherish for a very long time.
Izzy, we always get the opportunity to pick the brains of have high performance athletes. When you look back at those early days, as you're saying, playing with your, you know, your sister's slipper as a ball, the guys that you were playing alongside at that time, what do you think you had that they didn't? Why are you an All Black and maybe they played club rugby or maybe in the NPC but didn't get further?
Wow, that's a good question. You got to have talent, obviously, and you got to have a desire. I come from pretty humble beginnings. I got a large family, and I think a big factor that contributed to my success is I had a lot of older brothers. So I built a real competitive edge from a young age. You know, there's no better way to learn and learn the hard way than your own family members tearing you to bits on the backyard and beating you convincingly. So you had to learn the hard way. So for me, I think the family dynamics, wanting to break the system and break the cycle, you know, I was a pretty, how do I word this right? I was a pretty rough kid. You know, I grew up in an area that, you know, sleeping on the streets, roaming the streets, and getting up to mischief was just the norm. So once I started realizing that rugby for me could be a potential, I just wanted to break the cycle and to show not only my family and make my family proud, just to show other kids that are in similar situations, and there are many of them in this country, that anything is possible. You know, if you put your mind to it. For me, growing up, I'll never forget this image of running around on my on the road. And we lived down a dead end street in a state house, you know, humble as beginnings, and looking up in the sky and going, playing for the All Blacks just feels like it's not possible. You know, why am I able to play for the All Blacks coming from this, you know, little dead end street in Hawke's Bay? I thought it was just, yeah, not even achievable. But for me to be able to achieve that, it might showcase young kids that don't have all the resources, don't have all the flash boots, that have to go to cash converters, which is you know, a place where you loan out all your pawn off your bits to get cash so my dad could drive me to training. Those kind of stories that I want to share so that young kids that are going through similar things, that it can be achieved. So I think that kind of motivation motivated me to break the cycle. And obviously talent, you know, I got some good talent from my family members and I was able to punch on. But my brothers were very good. They were very good rugby players too. And they probably just didn't get the opportunities that I was allowed. I got an opportunity to go to a pretty successful school, not for sport. We got beaten at rugby every single week. But in general, you know, education was a huge part of that school, taught me respect, taught me the understanding of working hard, and yeah, taught me just skills that I needed to succeed in life. So yeah, a lot of things fell my way.
I mean, you talk there, you know, very lucidly about it, and you paint an incredible picture. I mean, my second question actually links to a piece of text, a poem actually I was reading today by Vernon Scannell, which is called "The Climb and the Dream," which is all about a kid who finds a tree, a massive tree, and wants to climb it. And half the poem is about him going all the way up to the top of the tree and standing on the top of the tree and realizing that life is great. And then the second half of the poem is all about his way down and the journey down and how difficult it is. And actually, when he gets back to the floor, he realizes that the way down was probably equally as difficult as the way up, even though it was all about the way up. I mean, it's a brilliant poem, and it immediately made me think of someone like you who has journeyed all the way to the top and then the way down. I suppose the question that I'm getting to, and you probably have already worked it out, is it as tough on the way up as it is on the way down? I mean, you are now battling with it, and I'm sure it's still going on. You're still having moments where you go, "Oh, I wish I was still playing. I wish I was still in the tree." You know, is on the way up as difficult as on the way down, Izzy?
Oh, 100%. I think going up was probably a little bit easier. You know, there's less pressure. You don't have the expectations. You know, getting there is near on impossible. But if you're able to get there, it's a hell of a journey. It's a hell of a ride. The come down, the climbing down the mountain, climbing down that tree is probably the hardest one you'll ever have to deal with. Because once you get to the top, you know, it comes with so much public pressure, external pressure, family pressure, just pressure in general. In New Zealand, once you're in All Black, you're known throughout the country, only 5 million population. So everyone wants to know exactly your every move. And then once that's taken away, it's an understanding of trying to figure out who you are. And I'm going through that now. You know, I've been out of the game for 5 years. I've got two beautiful kids. I've got a wife. But all I've ever known is rugby and playing rugby. And now it's at a stage in my life where it's like, okay, well, rugby's a small part of my life. But at the time, I considered it everything. And now it's like, well, who am I? And now I'm jumping into broadcasting and I'm talking about sport and things I love every single day, which I'm so grateful for. But also there's more things to life that I'm trying to figure out as well. So I guess the way down is, yeah, it's scary. I'm 14 months sober, boys. I've made a hell of a change in my life. I got rid of alcohol because when you finish, there's nothing stopping you from going out and being social and getting carried away. So yeah, it's a constant journey. It takes a couple of years to get used to the new you, which is Israel Dagg, the human, not Izzy Dagg, the rugby player. And once you get past it, I don't know how long it'll take. I'm still juggling with it. But once you get past it, life's a bit easier.
Hmm. I mean, an add-on to that question is, I suppose, and to lighten it, to bring it around a bit of levity, what's been the best discovery about yourself in that space of time? What's been the thing that's really made you go, okay, I can do this?
Probably the biggest discovery is actually being confident in myself. I've always had a bit of self-doubt. You know, I've always questioned whether I'm good enough, even throughout my career. You know, playing in the All Blacks, people like, you know, you should be full of confidence. But there was always times when I'm second-guessing myself playing. So for me, jumping into broadcasting, you know, Sam, both of you, you're probably well across all sports. You know, I'm very well across rugby, but at the moment I've had to throw myself in the deep end talking about a lot of sports that don't get coverage. So testing myself, having to you know, do a lot of work in certain arenas. You know, broadcasting is quite a fickle industry, or you know, like you can get caught up trying to be someone you're not. And so for me, it's trying to maintain confidence and maintain who I am. You know, I'm Izzy Dagg, the former rugby player, but I'm also Izzy Dagg from Hawke's Bay that's got a unique background. So never forget that. So for me, it's just being myself, just continuing to be myself. Don't get caught up in trying to be other things, because as soon as you go down that line, you get found out pretty quick.
Yeah. Probably, Izzy, a lot of people listening and watching will have a similar experience of playing, you know, maybe just at a grassroots level, but the pressure you feel just at that level, that low level, in terms of making sure you kick the goals, making sure you take your catches, and how demoralized you can feel the Saturday night after it if you feel like you've had a bad game. How, I often think, how can professional players cope with that at all? Because it feels like, I feel that pressure on Saturday, and it is a million times worse for a professional player. How can you cope with that?
Oh, I struggled. I absolutely struggled. I went through a phase where I wanted everyone to love me. You know, I want everyone to like Izzy Dagg. As soon as I made a mistake, I had, oh my God, 5 million people think I'm an idiot here. You know, like, I imagine the headlines on Monday, you've just absolutely butchered it, stuffed up. So you just got to understand that when you're representing a team like the All Blacks, the pressure is there. It's always going to be there, whether you like it or not. But it's actually just controlling your thoughts, you know, controlling your mind. Your mind is so powerful, man. It can lead you down some some holes, and it's hard to get out of there. So I went for a period in 2015, the year of the World Cup. So I'd just come off a 2011 win. You know, I'd been flying. I was going so well for 2 or 3 years. I got comfortable. Thought things were going to be given to me, and the reality is it wasn't. 2015, I got dropped. I was playing poorly, and I got to the end of that season, and I honestly was so close to retiring and giving up. I just had enough. The pressure, the external pressure that my mind was putting on myself, the comments I was reading online, they were so abusive, they were so direct. My mum was in tears. I was like, why do I want to put myself through this? Why would anyone want to put themselves through this? So I actually nearly gave up. But then I got injured. You never say you want to get injured and it's a good thing, but this injury came at the right time for me. I dislocated my shoulder, had to get surgery. I was out of the game for 6 months. That 6 months was a defining moment for me. That 6 months made me realize, why the hell do I play this game? Why did I play this game as a 9-year-old? That's because I love this game. It's because I was having fun. You know, you lose sight of the reasons you actually started playing this game when you're representing a team like the All Blacks. You're making, you know, money and it's your job. You can actually lose sight of why you do things. So for me, I rolled back the clock and I thought, okay, I'm going to figure out why I play this game. I play this game because I loved it. I was good at it. I was having fun. And I wanted to make my family proud. Not make 5 million people proud and carrying 5 million people on your shoulders, my family. And once I did that, man, it was like a flick of the switch moment, eh? It was crazy. I made mistakes, but they didn't linger. They didn't hang around for a while. I was able to shake off moments. And 2016, I don't know if you boys remember, I had the best year of my career. I got dropped on 49 games. I thought that was it. I'm going to be stranded on just before half a century. And then I came back, played against the Welsh in Wellington for my 50th with my good friend Ben Smith, and then went on to have, yeah, my greatest, I reckon, yeah, in the All Blacks, playing predominantly on the wing. But, man, I was just so free. I was so relaxed, and I felt like I got rid of the burden that was weighing me down heavily.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to mention this. I was going to mention this sort of just this little burst that you had towards the end of your career and how you refound it. And it's so beautiful to hear the revelation that you sort of came to in yourself. And it's so amazing to hear that kind of injury kind of gave you that opportunity in a sense. I suppose my question really is around how you go about doing what you're doing at that top level in terms of the All Blacks. How do you, was there any moments in your career that you were able to stand and enjoy it. And I know that sounds strange because it kind of links to your point there, Sam, about almost having too much on. And did you feel that in 2016? Was there a realization of you being on the pitch and going, actually, I'm here, I'm present, I'm actually just playing rugby and I'm enjoying it? Yeah,
that was that year, 2016, by far my greatest memory, my greatest time in the black jersey. You know, I was written off 2015. People were like, retire, he's finished, he's done, you know, move on. Ben Smith's all good. Nehi Milner-Scudder, you know, we're going to be fine. Waisaki Noholo. So for me, I'm not saying I'll prove the doubters wrong, but I had those comments in the back of my mind. You know, I had them just lingering there, okay, going sweet as. So once I played, yeah, I had a different appreciation for the game because nothing's ever given. That jersey's never given. You've always spoken about you're only a caretaker. So that was, I didn't know that was going to be my final year. I was hoping I had a couple more years in, but 2017, I ruined my knee, and that was the decline that went with me and playing rugby. But 2016, just so happy. Every week, I was grateful. Everything was happy. I was playing well. My body was functioning well. I was playing against the Irish. And I don't know, I don't want to sound arrogant, but I just had this certain confidence about my game. And when your game's on, you feel it. The last test of the year, we're playing France. I was playing fullback. It was a tough game, but played well. We got the result. We played Ireland in Dublin, coming off a loss in Chicago. Played well in that game. Like, yeah, things just started to tick, and I was in a really happy, positive place. And I think the pressure was there, but I didn't feel it. I just didn't feel the pressure. I was more enjoyment, gratefulness, and just soaking up that moment of wearing. It actually felt like I represented the team for the first time again in 2016. Even though I've been around for 5 years previously, that felt like my first year in that jersey. And in my first year in 2010, it felt the same. And I was young, 20, and I was just playing rugby, enjoying myself.
Wow. A rebirth. I love that. I love that. I'll let Sam loose on the next question, but I just want to talk about technically back three, if you can. I mean, obviously it's a massive area, but you know, I suppose the best question perhaps phrased would be about a youngster listening to this show, and we've got a few that are listening. They're playing on the wing, they're playing at fullback. What sort of piece of advice? What sort of things are you whispering in the ear of that kid to look out for, to be aware of? Where can they improve their management? Obviously, you know, technically they'll be working hard, they'll be out there doing everything they possibly can, but just something golden from Israel Dagg to this little kid. What can you say?
I think the biggest thing you can have over anyone else is your ability to anticipate the game, anticipation, you know, trying to see what's unfolding before it's even happened. So your ability to stay ahead of the game, ahead of the curve. You know, as a fullback, we do a lot of running that's unrewarded running. So you're trying to, you know, move at the back. So just constantly, you look at the greatest fullbacks in the game, their ability to pop up at the right time. And that's not just fluke. You know, they've seen that two or three phases before it's happened. You know, so I'd say try and, you know, use your instinctual play, which is anticipation. I remember this time I spoke to Gilbert Anoka, and Gilbert Anoka is a great man for the All Blacks, mental skills coach. And I said in 2016, I said, oh, I'm getting old, birdie, blah, blah, blah. And he says, yeah, but you're getting old, but you're getting wise. Because your ability to anticipate the game is far beyond a lot of these young players coming through. So I'll never forget that saying that he said that to me. So I'd say one of those areas as well, anticipating the play. Also, don't forget your strengths. A lot of us tend to focus on our weaknesses, and I was guilty of that. But there's a reason you are there, and your biggest strength is what's got you there. So, you know, make those strengths world-class, whether it be speed, whether it be evasion, whether it be defensively. Don't ever forget, practicing and your strengths. And the way that the game's gone, and it's never evolved, and it's never changed, and what we've seen with a lot of these teams is you've got to be brave in the air. Mm-hmm. You've got to be brave. You've got to do the things that not many want to do, and that's jump up and catch high balls and don't get bored of it. You know, I absolutely love catching high balls. I absolutely love playing South Africa because I knew that was going to be the biggest test for me as a fullback. So win the year, you win the game.
I very briefly, it's really interesting you say that because I was at a game on Sunday between Harlequins and Saracens, two unbelievable exponents in the air, Alex Goode and Lee Halfpenny are back for the, and both senior players and both still doing the business. So there's definitely a point in what you're saying there. If you're good in the air, you can prolong your career.
Oh, definitely.
as long as your body coordinates with you, you know, it helps
you
out.
Yeah, I've got sore patellas now, and the thought of actually jumping just gives me the shakes. But yeah, look, you just have to. It's part of the game. Like, you cannot play in the back three and you unable to catch high balls. Mm. You know, all teams are doing it. The North, they love doing it. The All Blacks, they do it. You just gotta catch the air. And yeah, like, there's some fantastic outside backs there, but those will be the three that I'd probably hone in on.
So you obviously got the kind of dream ending of your career taken away from you with your knee injuries. Did you have a plan for what you would have liked to have done? Would you have liked to have played elsewhere other than New Zealand at some point in towards the end of your career?
I would have loved to. Yeah, definitely. I was actually probably 80-90% signed for Leinster.
Mm.
Yeah, really? 2016, I actually caught up with Issa Nathiwa and the coach at the time. In 2016, we played in Dublin. I didn't tell the ABs this, but they picked me up after the test and I went through all the facilities and I was like, oh, yeah, I could see myself here. So, yeah, I was pretty close to shooting off, but then Steve Hansen obviously caught wind of it, got in my ear and convinced me to stay. So yeah, that was the end of that. Like 2015 when I was playing poorly, yeah, I put the feelers out there to shoot off. But reality is, at that time, we didn't have the Japan money that was available now. Going to Leinster, going to Toulon was a nice option, but you were only going for a different view, really, because the money was pretty same, unless you're, you know, the big wigs that demand millions. But for me, yeah, it was pretty similar. So I didn't really have it in my thoughts to shoot offshore. I wanted to finish my career here and, you know, stay as a New Zealander playing solely in New Zealand. So, yeah, think about it now. It would have been great to travel and get a look around and see what's available out there. But, yeah, it wasn't really on my radar when I was playing here.
I just want you a very quick fire one, Izzy. You talk about there made me think about some of the great players who the Kiwis who moved abroad. Who, in your view, is the best non-capped All Black that you've played with?
Oh,
hey, now you're testing me.
This is such an unfair question because he's bound to leave someone out, isn't he? He's going about 15 minutes from now, about 15, 20 minutes from now, he's going to be driving somewhere and Izzy's going to go, yeah. Oh my God, I didn't say him.
I forgot about him. One that I always think about, he's a capped All Black. Obviously, yeah, I know you want a non-cap, but one I always think about is Charles Peutau.
Mm.
I always think about Charles, went to Bristol Bears, signed plenty, played extremely well. He only played a handful of games here. And the reason I say he played in the same position as me, but he was a phenomenal player. And I know how well-respected he was up there in the North. I think the world would have been his oyster if he was able to stay here. I think he would have absolutely carved an absolute career for the All Blacks. So he's one that springs to mind. One that's just come through, Toby Arnold. Yeah, I think I played Toby quite a few times at NPC level. We played for the Bay of Plenty Steamers. Didn't really quite kick on here in New Zealand. We played in a similar position. He went over to Leon and had a hell of a career over the Leon team. And he's one that potentially, with the career that's unfolded for him over there, could have potentially cracked on here. But there's so many, man. Like, you see the players here that are just battling away, and then they go to these European sides and they're like stars. And you're like,
yeah.
What was it, us? Did we just miss them, or are they just hiding and playing poorly over here? I don't know. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, we talked about Fergus Burke, didn't we, recently, about that opportunity in which just to come. And I think this guy's going to be something really special. Yeah. He could be exactly what you're talking about there.
Well, he's my wife's cousin. So I met Ferguson when he moved down here. He's from Gisborne area. And he moved down here, got him over for dinner. I actually remember meeting Fergus Burke when he was thinking about signing to go to down to Canterbury when he was still at high school. He was in Gizzy, come and visited me in Gisborne, and this young fella turns up and, yeah, been able to play with Ferg, seeing his career unfold. And then now, I was gutted he left, because that's left my Crusaders in a hole. But well done. Well done. He's going to go over there, make plenty pounds, double New Zealand dollar. So why not? And potentially play for England. How long till he plays for England?
Yeah, I mean, I think Scotland are also. I think he's got a couple of countries up north who are looking at him. I mean, surely if he can do the stuff for Saracens, he's going to have all sorts of people sniffing after him. Surely.
What 100%. About that himself? You know, you stole him.
Well, hold on. We're not getting the blame here, is he? This is where, you know, with respect.
Johnny McNichol. Yeah.
We stole Gallivanscom.
Oh yeah, there is actually. There's a whole. You could do a whole 15, couldn't you? Do a 15 of stolen New Zealand
stolen
jewels.
Kiwis, yeah.
Yes, I like it. Final question for me, because I think I know the answer, and I'll tell you what I think I know the answer is. Who was your favourite player? Is the answer Christian Cullen? He's my favourite player, so I'm rather hoping he's yours. But carry on.
He is. There's no doubt. The Paikakariki Express, like. Just you look at his clips and some of his ability to beat a man just changed the way that fullbacks play the game. Just the way that he didn't slow down when he was manoeuvring. He was so bloody strong. And some of those tries he scored were just out of this world. So, yeah, I wanted to be Christian Cullen. He knows that. I've interviewed him a few times and I've been gushing and going a bit bright weird. I actually get to play golf with Cully too, and last time I played him, I beat him, so he was pretty gutted about that. But mate, by far, Christian Cullen. Yeah, just wanted to be Cully. Yeah, wanted to meet Cully. Never forget this Hurricanes bus coming to Hawke's Bay and big yellow and black bus. And there's Cully, there's Tanu Umanga, there's Jonah Lomu. Ah, man, wanted to be a Hurricane, then they chucked me in the draft. Never become a Hurricane. Now I can't stand them. Now I'm just fading.
And they played in massive duvet shirts, didn't they? They were so thick, they were so massive, these shirts. You watch them, it's raining, they've gained 3 stone, haven't they?
Yeah, and that's the thing. We're a bit fancy, you know, we've got all these fancy shoes and boots and socks and all these jerseys that are 360 molded to our bodies, etc. Look what they were able to do. And look what they were able to achieve. Playing in those bloody jerseys. Bring back the old vintage jerseys, I reckon.
Yeah, let's see how good they are now, nowadays. Let's put them in a big 6 stone jersey, sopping wet. Let's see how good you are now.
Yeah. What's our excuse for getting caught?
We talked about some negatives at the start, Izzy. I want to end with what is the best game you have ever played? It doesn't have to be an All Blacks game. It can be any game where it comes back to years past thinking that was an unbelievable game.
There's been a few. The best game I've ever played as performance wise was 11 Australian semi final. I stuffed up the week before then and Mills got injured and, you know, I had a job to do and I was under so much pressure to go out there and to perform and everything I did was just gold. Probably just cemented me on the world-class arena as someone, you know, that can play the game. So that would be the best game. But I think my fondest memory, I'm going to go back to it and it's against your fellow countrymen, the Welsh, playing in Wellington. Didn't play game one, stranded on 49, got picked to go play for the All Blacks again after being dropped to get an opportunity to play again for my 50th test against Wales in Wellington after being dropped and coming from so far injury-wise, mentally, etc. That will probably be the proudest moment, I reckon, just being able to show people that you could be dealt adversity, and a bit of hardship or whatever you portray it as, but you know, you put your mind to something, you want it so bad that you can get back to it if you really and truly start believing it and believe in yourself. So yeah, I'll never forget that moment in 2016 Wellington, getting the nod from Steve Hansen and Ian Foster to play against the Welsh. And I scored the first try too, so I was fizzed.
Oh man, that is it. We're not going any further. That is a beautiful, beautiful ending to an absolutely brilliant half hour in the presence of someone who, yeah, okay, he will probably say that there are other players out there, but for me, what a man Israel Dagge is. Sam Lana, how good was he? Hey, how good was that boy?
We're very lucky. We are very lucky. Thank you so much for the time, Israel. It's been unbelievable.
Yeah.
No worries, boys. Thank you for having me. And honestly, boys, if you need a chat anytime, I'm more than happy to help out. Post matches, whatever. Just sing out, Sammy. And
you're too kind, ladies and gentlemen. Your thanks once again. This has been the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast, and that was Israel Dagge.